Hello and welcome to another episode of Dice Exploder. Each week we take a tabletop mechanic and try and crack the combo on its padlock. My name is Sam Dunnewald and my co-host today is Whitney DeLaglio. And here she is introducing herself.
Hi, I'm Whitney of Toasty Seahorse Studios. My pronouns are she, her, and bro. I've designed games, hyped games, written for games, and drawn for games.
Whitney's the designer behind Prism, a diceless classic from the 10s about mermaids and their relationships, as well as The Old, the Cold, the Bold, a game about a criminal gig economy. Whitney's got a second edition of The Old, the Cold, the Bold coming to Backer Kit in a couple of weeks, May 4th, so I thought I'd have her on to talk about a different game that The Old, the Cold, the Bold is based on. Lady Blackbird, John Harper's 2009 game about the eponymous Lady Blackbird, a runaway noble trying to reunite with her infamous pirate boyfriend and the plucky crew of smugglers who've agreed to help her. I think I've made no secret that I'm a huge sucker for pre-written characters. I think there should be way more of them in RPGs, and Lady Blackbird is the perfect example of why. One of the mechanics it uses to really make its characters sing is keys. Basically statements about your character that you're rewarded for leaning into, or bucking entirely, leaving behind forever, and completely reinventing yourself. Keys are a key part of The Cold, the Old, the Bold, too. So today, we're getting into everything about them and how you, or Whitney, might hack them. Quick note before we get started, since recording this episode, I've learned that keys are actually originally from The Shadow of Yesterday by Clinton R. Nixon, so credit to Clint for the design tech here. Thanks to everyone who supports Dice Exploder on Patreon, and here is Whitney with keys from Lady Blackbird. Whitney, welcome to Dice Exploder.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So what are we talking about today?
Today we're talking about Lady Blackbird and my game inspired by Lady Blackbird, The Old, the Cold, the Bold.
Yeah. So let's start with Lady Blackbird. What is the deal with this fucking game? Like, what's your history with Lady Blackbird? You made a whole game based on or inspired by it. You must have a background with it. Tell me about that.
Well, when I was first dipping my toes into the pool that is the indie gaming community, in Google Plus, RIP still existed, a friend recommended it to me because I was looking for easy games to get into. And like, oh, you should try Lady Blackbird. And it's a 5-player game, but you can actually run it with less players, I think, where it's a story with a beginning and sort of an end. And you figure out what happens in the middle, where you're basically a noble woman trying to get back to her pirate boyfriend, and your bodyguard's there, and the pilot, captain, and mechanic of the ship that's getting you there is also in the game. And then whether you go back to your pirate boyfriend is up to you and the table. Yeah, but I just like the idea that it's like a compartmentalized experience, because it's like every character has its own character sheet and you're given like just enough to bite into to make up stuff as you go along.
Yeah, yeah. You really have these like really strongly defined pre-generated characters of like Lady Blackbird and her bodyguard and the captain of the ship, right? And you also have like a really strongly framed goal, like you're saying, go find your pirate boyfriend and see how he feels about you now. But it also, I think most crucially to me, like I could do a whole episode on this, it has like a really, really strong starting situation that it puts you in. Like your ship that you are being smuggled on essentially has been picked up by the like evil space empire essentially. And you are trying to get back to your ship and escape. And after that, you know, maybe you're going to go find your pirate boyfriend. Maybe you're going to have to go hide in an asteroid field, like whatever the thing is. Maybe you're going to go have adventures with the sky squid. Like there are all kinds of like potential things that the game sort of gestures towards. But you always start in prison in like having been picked up for a traffic violation, basically. Right.
Yeah.
And like with that tension hanging over you of like, are they going to discover that you are secretly a noble and what will happen if they do? And I think all of that stuff is really clever and really good for doing what you were saying of like getting into a one-shot contained kind of experience and really like kicking off with a bang and like giving you some direction for play. Mm-hmm. This is a John Harper game. It came out in 2010. We specifically are going to talk about the mechanic of keys in this game. So why don't you walk us through what's the deal with a key on a character sheet?
A key on a character sheet is kind of like a signal to the player and to the experience point market that whenever you act upon your character's archetype, you turn that key and that gives you experience points. So it kind of like informs the player how this character behaves and solves problems. So you have Cyrus, who is the captain of the Owl. He used to work for the Empire, but now he doesn't. So you have Key of the Outcast, which is like you are exiled from the Empire. Turn this key when your outcast status causes you trouble, which in case at the beginning of the episode, as we stated, you're arrested. So it's only a matter of time to like they connect the dots and find out that, like, you know, you're an ex-soldier.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about a key is that you can, you know, turn it normally, but you can also have that key get you in trouble. And like at the beginning of the game, that key can already get Cyrus in trouble when they're all arrested.
Yeah. It works kind of like fate aspects that way, right? Of like all of these are supposed to be kind of double-edged swords, even if one of those edges is like sharper on any individual key, like Key of the Outcast here, right? Like it's really easy to imagine, oh, okay, I'm going to use this to my benefit. To, you know, fit in with other exiles from the Empire. Other people don't like the Empire. Or I'm going to use it to my detriment here when they find out who I am and like, you know, my like old deputy is here and hates my guts or like whatever the thing is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I know you mentioned it in that line is that keys also have a buy-off, which is basically you turning your key to the extreme or doing the opposite. And in this case, the Key of the Outcast is regaining your former standing or joining a new group.
Yeah, I think it'd be helpful to maybe do another example to sort of show what these buy-offs kind of look like. So Lady Blackbird herself has Key of the Imposter, which says, you are in disguise, passing yourself off as a commoner. Hit your key when you perform well enough to fool someone with your disguise. Okay, great. Like, you're going to be doing the, like, prince in pauper's clothing, like, thing for a bunch of time. And then the buy-off is, reveal your true identity to someone you fooled. And the buy-offs all feel kind of like that, a big moment, the, like, climax of having played into this thing for a while, right? Where, yeah, if you're going to do the thing where, like, oh, I spend an hour, like, being in disguise and being like, oh, I'm just a lowly commoner. And then, like, you throw off your cloak and we get the big, like, anime moment or whatever, right? Like, I'm like, this is who I really am. Like, and when you hit your key, you get XP, right? And when you hit your key and it gets you in trouble, you get 2 XP. And when you hit your buy-off, you essentially get 5 XP, right? You get this, like, big bonus whenever you do it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, like, I think that these things are this really incredible little package of, like, role-playing prompt. I don't know. Tell me what you think about keys. Like, what drew you to keys? What excites you about keys?
I think like when you're at like at a convention or at the table with your friends and maybe it's like this is like a new game for you or it's a first time for people role playing or with like typical character generation, a lot of times it's up to the player. Like, what is your character like? How's your character behave? How's your character problem solve? Usually the character generation doesn't answer those questions. So it's up to the player. Mm-hmm. So I feel like with this game in particular, it does allow that work for you with the keys. Because every key is evocative, so you know, like, what the character's backstory is, how they interact with the world around them, and how they solve problems. Like, Kale, for example, his keys, he's the mechanic, but he also likes shiny things. So he's constantly, you turn a key when you steal stuff.
Yeah. I love keys because I've been arguing for years at this point, sometimes on the show and often off the show, that, like, I love pre-gens and more games should have pre-gens. And like keys are why. Like the thing that you just described of like, okay, so you show up at the table and we like get our stats and like now what? Like what do I do with this character? Like keys solve that problem. There's a whole list of them. You get 3 of them per character and it's really easy when you don't know what to do. You know, in the same way like in Apocalypse World or like a PBTA game, you can look down at your character sheet and be like, what should I do right now? Here's a move. I'm going to do that move. Does it make sense? Let's find out, you know? Like, this is like the fiction forward, like, version of that with keys, right? It's like, I don't know what to do, but I'm playing Kale, and this says he likes shiny things. So, like, all right, what can I steal while I'm locked in this jail cell? Like, you know, even if it doesn't make sense, it gives you some direction. And then often it does make sense, right? Like, maybe, oh, I like shiny things. That means, did I, like, pocket this key earlier? You know, like, there's so many directions you can lean with all of these. And then you can make strong choices with them too, right? Like Key of Greed is going to play really differently if you are saying like, ooh, I am constantly stealing from the other players at the table, like their coins, right? Versus, oh, I know a lot about like diamonds or whatever. And that means when we encounter a diamond, like I'm going to distract us while I go pick it up. And I know a lot about it. I can evaluate it because I like shiny things so much, you know? But also, a big problem a lot of people have with pre-generated characters is feeling like they are locked in, I feel like. And the keys give you like clear targets to shoot for. Well, I think not locking you in, right? Like it's still up to you whether you're going to hit the key, like which of them you're going to prioritize or exactly how you're going to use any individual one of them. So they just like give you clear targets while leaving you a lot of flexibility. And I love that about them. And if you don't like one, you can just hit the buy off right away, right?
Yeah. And I often forget to do this part, but you replace it with a new key. You're supposed to do that, but I never remember to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, but so they're also an advancement track thing, right? Like, which feels right because they're like moments of character growth when you buy off a key or character change at any rate, not necessarily always growth. And then there's a list of like generic keys that anyone can take in the back of the, I want to say book, but it's only a 16-page PDF. But like back there on one of the pages is a bunch of extra keys you can take. And the keys are also like simple enough and the formatting is clear enough that it's like very easy to be able to write your own too, I think. Like they're one sentence long, you know, plus a buy-off. Mm-hmm. How have keys played at the table for you when you are actually like playing Lady Blackbird?
Well, the first time I played Lady Blackbird, I was Lady Blackbird. Mm-hmm. And I like basically bought off a key of the imposter like almost immediately while we were still in prison because I was like, I'm going to reveal that I'm a Stormblood right now. Because I thought it made sense for how I envision Lady Blackbird, want to show off as soon as possible. And also because I really wanted Secret of the Sky Squid. I'm like, if I buy off something now, I'll have Sky Squid now. Secret of the Sky Squid now. So win-win.
Yeah, that's really interesting contrast to I've played just a one shot of this game. And the Lady Blackbird in our game spent the whole session, like 3 hours, leading into like, ooh, I'm secretly like not buying off that key, right? And like really playing the character in a different way. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Go on though.
Oh yeah. Yeah, no. And the person who played Kale at the table interpreted the brotherhood they had between him and Cyrus as romantic, but it was unfortunately unrequited love where Kale was in love with Cyrus, but Cyrus was in love with Lady Blackbird. Mm-hmm. So and the interesting thing about this game is every time I've either been in the game or ran it, the relationship between Natasha and her bodyguard Naomi is never the same. Because when I played it for the first time, I was kind of like the person who's privileged and is trying to help but kind of failing at it because they don't know how to. But we ended up being like, you know, best buds in the end. But I ran Orban sessions where like Naomi hates Natasha and it's begrudgingly protecting her.
Yeah.
Or there's more like a contractual thing where it's just like, okay, I'm serving you until you get to your boyfriend and then we're done. I'm free. I never have to see you again.
That really speaks to like how much flexibility there is with these keys and like with pre-generated characters in general, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also love like how with keys, they really play to different lengths of campaign in a really interesting way. Like in a one shot, I think everyone kind of feels like I should really like, you know, make some noise, you know, like get this stuff, get some shit going, you know, and the buy-offs in particular give you a really clear way to do that because all of them are just so obviously, oh, this will be a big moment that I can make happen, you know, if that's the thing that I want to do. But it is also, it's really easy to imagine playing a succession game of Lady Blackbird and like really taking your time with those buy-offs too and like still hitting the keys for a long time and like doing the thing with them. And I love that like in both of those circumstances, there's still this sort of like endless potential energy to the buy-offs. Like there's this constant tension that never goes away, even if you never take the buy-off of like, but is the buy-off going to happen this time or not? I think it's such a neat little thing to have in a tight little package here. Have you played any late campaigns of Lady Blackbird?
the first session I was in was a play by post, so it was kind of like a campaign. I feel like even when it's a quote unquote one shot, we usually spread out to three sessions just so it can breathe. Because usually it's only a one shot when it's like at a con. But the other thing, and I know I mentioned this like way on before, like it's a 5-player game, but I run it for a different number of people. It's not always a full house. Like, I've run it for a Kale and a Snargle who are like, how about the A team like takes care of Lady Blackbird getting to her boyfriend and we just go off on an adventure? I'm like, bet. Okay, so Cyrus and Naomi, that's their problem. The two of you are going to go on a little.
He's starting a separate cell and like shenanigans are afoot. Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this would, if only because, like I said, the setting gives you just enough to bite into, but doesn't like confine you into a box of this is exactly how the world works and you can't go outside this box. So you could easily be like, okay, the owls escape the clutches of the Imperial Army. We could go to this planet. We could go to the asteroids. We could spend 3 episodes with Sky Squids. I would love that personally, but... I love the Sky Twist so much. Or you could have like really extensive refresh scenes, just kind of like, you know, flashbacks and character history and character questions. Like, this game can easily be a one shot, but I feel like with depending on how much you want to explore, whether it be character interactions or the world around you, it could definitely be multiple sessions.
Yeah, totally.
Hi, I'm Maia, and this is Maia's Game Room, a narrative actual play anthology featuring short-form, story-driven TTRPGs. Each season tells a new story using a different rules-light system brought to life with sound design, editing, and emotional-rich roleplay. So, if you love cinematic storytelling and character-driven drama, come check out Season 1, set in the haunting world of the Electric State RPG. Just search Maia's Game Room wherever you get your podcasts.
So you've made a game kind of inspired by Lady Blackbird that like mechanically feels very similar. It's called The Old, the Cold, and the Bold. It is coming to Backer Kit very soon. Tell me about that game. Like, where did that game come from and why did you use Lady Blackbird as like a framework for it?
So my first game that I wrote, I had an idea, but I didn't really like know what waffle mold to put it in. Because it was originally a game about evil house spouses, but that's a story for a different day. And then I was like, I really like crime dramas, but crime dramas have a lot of concept I don't exactly like. So I'm like, how can I make a game about doing crimes that has all the stuff I don't like about crime dramas out of the equation? And I was listening to Terry Pratchett's audiobooks. And the idea of an assassin's guild and a thieves guild came up. And I was like, that sounds like perfect. It's regulated crime. So obviously it can't go too crazy or uncomfortable because it's, you know, regulated crime. And the title just came to me. Like, it wasn't even like something I was like brainstorming. I was just like, it's going to be called The Old, the Cold, the Bold. I'm like, oh, those are the three archetypes. Yeah. And I'd been wanting to do a hack of Lady Blackbird anyway. So it seemed like a good fit because it's like it's the three archetypes would be just each their own character sheet. And then it was just a matter of figuring out how to make it different from Lady Blackbird and add add my own content to it.
Yeah. It's interesting that like both of these games just have the name of the most important character, like in the title. Yours is a trio, right? But it is also, I don't know, there's something interesting about that. Like, I also think like by naming the characters after their archetypes, you know, it's not like they refer to each other. It's not like when I sit down to play the game and I'm playing the cold, I'm like, hey, Bold, come over here and like, help me with this, you know, like, but that makes it interesting to me. The like midpoint on pre-generated character to not that you have kind of found in your game, where on the one hand they feel totally like pre-gens in the sense that they are really clear archetypes and they have all these keys really like laid out, but they don't feel like pre-gens in that they don't have names and it's like very clear that you can kind of take them and do whatever you want with them. And It's so weird that just like naming them makes them feel like pre-gens and Lady Blackbird, whereas not naming them makes them feel like not pre-gens and yours. Right? Like the old just feels like a PBTA playbook or something, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas you're making exactly the same sort of choices about the character in Lady Blackbird or in The Old, the Cold, the Bold with the same kind of character. You know, like the characters are flexible in the same way, both in Lady Blackbird and The Old, the Cold, the Bold. You're literally just naming them in one and not the other.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense though, because once they're a name, they're not just any person. They're a person.
Yeah.
Like with Lady Blackbird, like her being like the name of the game, like she is the reason why you're like arrested, because if she didn't want to get back to her pirate boyfriend, none of you would be in the situation in the first place, because as you said, that's always the beginning. And while she has a name, you can make informed choices like, okay, she's has Key of the Stormblood. What does that mean? Has she cast her spells? Da, 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 da. But like with The Old, the Cold, the Bold, it's like, okay, I'm an old, so I'm like Mike from Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, or I'm Mr. White in Reservoir Dogs, but like what else about me am I adding to the character, which is including your screen name. So
totally. Yeah, so talk to me about writing keys for this game. Like what did you find like fun or easy about writing keys for The Old, the Cold, the Bold, and was there anything you found challenging?
Well, what was most challenging was making sure the diction made it so they were easy to turn. Because the thing is, it's like, especially with like an archetype or a character, like there's a million things you can think of a character will do at any given time, but you want to think of something that they're constantly doing so you can like more often than not turn the keys. So it was a matter of explaining each key in a way where a player can be using it like most of the time.
Yeah.
Because my thought was they have one key that they're turning more often and one key not so much, which is why I also added the team keys, just like, you know, just in case, since each player only has two keys instead of the usual three.
Well, you mentioned team keys there. We'll get back to that in a second, but go on.
Yeah. So, but the fun part was just like thinking of like what keys make that archetype shine. So like the old is the easiest because there's an old in like every crime drama, right? So it's just basically, okay, they're the fixer. So they're fixing.
Every time your back hurts, turn your key. Yeah.
I feel that. I wish I could buy that one off so I don't have it anymore. How do I buy that off?
You buy that one off by like getting paralyzed or something. I don't know.
No,
like,
no. I don't need my back anymore. Yeah. So that was easy enough to come up with keys for the old. And the cold was interesting because the diplomatic person in a crime drama usually gets trumped by the quote unquote loudmouth. Or the hothead. So it was fun making keys that put power back into the archetype. Mm-hmm. And of course, the bold was fun, but also difficult because the bold is kind of like a spinoff of the hothead / loudmouth, where I didn't want them to be like that. But I also wanted to keep that energy sort of in the playbook. So that one was probably the most challenging to come up with keys, but also the most fun because that archetype speaks to me on so many levels. But yeah. I appreciated the challenge though, because it was fun. It was fun just trying to think of ways to describe some things that makes them more open-ended keys.
Yeah, hearing you talk about it, it's interesting to me to think about how archetypal so many of these keys are, and then playing the game is like figuring out your version of what that archetype is going to be. Right? It's like the act of play is defining, like refining your character into a specific person as opposed to the archetype, whether that archetype is Lady Blackbird, noble on the run, or whether that archetype is the old, right? Like the old in the crime drama. But that I'm looking at like Cyrus Vance's keys, like the captain of the ship in Lady Blackbird, and he's got Key of the Commander, which says he's used to being in charge and giving orders. Okay, great. He's got the Key of Hidden Longing, which says that he's completely in love with Lady Blackbird. Great. And then he's got the Key of the Outcast, which we talked about earlier, which is that he's been exiled from the Empire. And those are all really broad in a way. Even the Hidden Longing one, they're such like archetypal things. But then as you play, it's like, okay, but what kind of commander am I going to be? Am I going to keep being a commander, or am I going to buy that off? Like, what does my love for Lady Blackbird look like exactly? Like, how does it manifest? Like, who is this Cyrus Vance? It's cool to see the act of play being this like chiseling down of who a character is. Do you want to tell me about team keys? What's the deal with team keys?
So especially since it's like only like a three player game at most, I wanted to give keys that kind of give you a reason to interact with your fellow partners in crime.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one team key that they all turn at the same time, which is when they're working as a unit, which is, you know, probably going to be often. But they also have keys that like hold hands with another player. Like the team key of the cold and the bold is basically they turn it together when the other one's hyping them up or making them laugh during a tense moment. And it kind of informs the way the character acts is another way. So like the regular cold keys are basically, okay, I only butt into conversations if I need to. And most of the time, I think I know what I'm doing. So the cold and the bold team key tells the player, okay, there are some instances where the cold doesn't necessarily feel as confident. And the bold will be there, be like, ah, no, it's okay, bro. We got this. And also the cold has a team key with the old, which is basically when they, you know, they're kind of like finding something in common. Like I too like expensive watches. So the cold keys tell you how the cold interacts with the world around them and how they solve problems. But the team keys kind of tells you how they interact with people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like that. I was kind of saying this before, but I like that as kind of an evolution on the sort of one-sided relationship keys, like that Cyrus Vance is in love with Lady Blackbird or whatever, right? Like making it a bi-directional thing lets you make it clearer that like both players should be invested in that relationship and like gives both of them like more of a handle for being able to contribute to what that looks like and how that plays out. I think that just feels more fun to me in a lot of ways because relationships are two-sided, right? Like that's yeah. it's a cool evolution. It also, I feel like, puts more emphasis on the group and the group dynamics than on like figuring out who your little character is going to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me a little bit more about like the setting of The Old, the Cold, the Bold. It is this like game where you're doing like crime gig economy workers, which is like an interesting thing. Where's that coming from? And like, why did that feel like a good fit for this kind of set of mechanics?
The criminal gig economy just kind of came to me because I feel like it would be an interesting concept to explore where it's like, okay, you're not necessarily criminals that crime 24/7. It's like, it kind of gives players the freedom to be like, okay, am I just doing this when I need a few extra bucks or am I like in it to win? Am I just doing crimes 24/7 and the app is helping me do it? Because it's like people use the app because it's supposed to get the cops off their back. So it's kind of like, okay, I can do crime, but I don't have to worry about the fuzz bothering me, which is fantastic. And since it's, you know, through an app, you're supposed to assume that like the gigs are vetted, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know that some people have like assumed that it's supposed to be like dystopian. But in the second edition, I'm trying to make that clear. That's not supposed to be the case because it's like, you know, as the partition said in Ankh-Morpork, is that, you know, crime is always going to happen. I might as well regulate it. And another thing I tried to make clear in the second edition is the criminal gig economy isn't just, you know, the regular crimes where you like steal a car. It's also like vigilante crimes, like, you know, or quote unquote, the justice people can afford. So like in my head, the app exists because you have like the high roller, high profile crimes. Like, okay, I'm a rich person and I don't like the other rich person or they stole my idea. I want you to make them pay or steal my stuff back. And those are the crimes that pay the bills for the company. And then you have the ones where it's like, there is a guy that's recklessly been driving through the neighborhood for days and no one's doing anything about it. So can you do anything about it? We're not going to ask questions, but, and then the app will be like, we're going to solve your problem. We're not going to tell you how, but we're going to do it. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about anyone getting, you know, hit in the neighborhood anymore.
Yeah, it's a really interesting take where like all the examples, you know, you hear gig economy crime and I'm like, ah, we're doing hitmen kind of thing. And then like I read all the examples in the book and I was like, oh, yeah, this is so much more like utopian vision of what this would look like, you know, of like we're doing crimes for like public service, which I found to be not the genre I was expecting from the game and not even how you would have to play the game, but like a great set of examples for like what this premise could be. Mm-hmm. All right, well, I don't know. Do you have any closing words for us? Do you have anything else you want to say about your game or about keys at large or Lady Blackbird?
More people should play Lady Blackbird. It's free. It's a PDF. You can get it anytime of day and print it out and run it for your friends. It's awesome.
And it's super short. Like, it's truly, it's like 11 pages of rules at most. And a lot of that is repeated text. And then, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's also such a low investment game. Like, it really does work as like a one shot, or it works as a really short campaign. And I think that that's a format I would also love to see more games in always.
And you get to roll handfuls of dice, which I know is exciting to any nerd ever. You get to roll handfuls of D6s.
Fistfuls. Yeah, fistfuls. You really get lots of dice going in this game. We'll talk about like traits and dice pools next time. But yeah. Well, Whitney, thanks so much for coming on Dice Exploder. This was great.
Thanks for having me. It was great.
Thanks again to Whitney for being here. Follow the second edition of The Old, the Cold, the Bold on Backerkit today. There's a link in the show notes. And follow Whitney on Blue Sky at Toasty Seahorse. Thanks again to everyone who supports Dice Exploder on Patreon. As always, you can find me on Blue Sky at Dice Exploder. And you can find my games at sdunwall.itch.io. Our logo was designed by Sporgery. Our theme song is Sunset Bridge by Purely Gray. And our ad music is Lily Pads by my boy, Travis Tesmer. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next time.